No hype. No fear. We are TFR. Frequency Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. It is Monday. I know. It's Monday again. I hope you guys had a wonderful Easter out there to make up for the fact that we've got to put up with another Monday today. But it's going to go fast. It's going to get through it. We're going to get all through it together. It's going to be great. I promise. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. It is the sixth day of April, making it again, as I mentioned earlier, Monday. Okay, but we're going to have fun today. I swear to God, this is going to be a great day. So just to keep you guys in the loop, because I'll know in about a minute, all you guys are going to be wondering what in the heck is going on. Today is backwards day. Okay. We're going to do the entire show in opposite order today, meaning we're going to start with our guest and we're going to have a wonderful interview. Mr. Gary Milievsky has taken some time out of his day to join us today. He's dealing with some computer updates right now. So I guess he has a little bit of free time right now. But for those of you guys who don't know, Gary Milievsky is kind of one of our go-to guys when it comes to tech information. When we're trying to figure out what's going on in the technical world out there, Gary Milievsky is one of these guys that we like to go to all the time. He is the founder of an organization called Snoopwall. You can go to snoopwall.com, and you can also find a link directly from our sidebar at Red Pill Reports to snoopwall.com. He's also the sole inventor of the company's technology. He's been extremely active in the InfoSec arena for a very long time, and most recently as the editor of Cyber Defense Magazine. He writes a lot of great articles and has a lot of good insight. And I'll tell you what, I'm excited to be talking to him this morning because there are a lot of news articles coming out right now about mobile breaches and about, thefts that are going on via your mobile phones. We had a crazy article last week about all of the applications on your phones that are sharing your location. And, Gary's kind of going to help us get to the bottom of all this stuff and see what we can do to help protect ourselves. So Gary, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule this morning to join us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast.
JD, it's a sincere honor and pleasure to be back. I really enjoy being on your show, and I know that you've got some amazing listeners out there who are wide awake and breaking out of the matrix.
Absolutely. And to be perfectly honest, we do have the best listeners in the world, and you are one of my favorite people to bring to them. So it's the honor is really all mine. Not sure where we'd like to start today. Obviously, we got a lot of new listeners. I don't know if you guys know. Oh, and just as an update for the listeners out there, on the fourth day of April, that was our fifth month anniversary. So we have officially been on air for 5 months now. And the listenership, Gary, has blossomed. I'm telling you what, to go into the chat room sometimes is a little overwhelming with how many people keep showing up every single day. We keep trying to, give them reasons to go find other things to do, but they keep coming back. I don't know why. But we try and bring them the best information that we can in the world. And as you said, we're trying to break down all of the different facets to the matrix, all of these different agendas of control. And one of them seems to be now, I don't know if it's really an agenda of control, but there seems to be an agenda out there amongst app developers just overall, trying to get your stuff. And I know that you at Snoopwall are really adamantly against that. So maybe we could start there since we have a lot of new listeners, maybe people who aren't familiar with Snoopwall. Why don't you talk about that development, how you got involved with that and kind of what you guys do. And then we'll take it over into the arena of why this stuff is so darn important to know about.
Sounds great, and we can actually jump live into the Play Store, the iTunes Store, and have some fun looking at apps together.
Love to do that.
Yeah, and try to step back and ask maybe four basic questions for every app, which is, who's the developer? Mm-hmm. What permissions do they use? Do they have a privacy policy? And how do they respond to emails? And, you'll be very surprised about that. We'll get into that. But about Snoopwall, So I have a friend, Dave, who invented a kind of a pen testing system. And one day, a couple of years ago, actually 2012, he said, "Hey, Gary, check this out. I can, you know," he said, "Hey, look, I can break into any system, including a mobile device, and eavesdrop remotely. Of course, I wouldn't do it as a bad guy. I would do it to help teach people to harden their networks." Mm-hmm. And that's Pony Express. And they're a pretty cool company, and they make pen testing appliances. And after I saw that and I helped him get some funding, I kind of was quietly in the back room helping him out as an informal advisor and a good friend. I said, "Dave, I love what you're doing. Hope you get the funding you need. Everything will go great." I helped him out. And I said, "By the way, I'm going to go start a company to stop what you're doing. Because if you can do it, criminals can do it."
Right.
So that was in 2012. We incorporated Snoopwall in January of 2013. From 2012 on, I've been filing a slew of patents on my invention of counter eavesdropping technology. You know, the old keyloggers from the good old days, Symantec and McAfee figured out how to stop those in Windows many years ago. And, you know, their antivirus scanners are always scrubbing and cleaning, but they're behind the eight ball. They can catch about 50% of the malware at best, by the way, including independent tests. And the vice president of Symantec was quoted in the Wall Street Journal being honest, saying, "You know what? Antivirus is dead. So every time you see a progress bar and a green light on your antivirus scanner, you've got to ask yourself, what is it really doing? And is it catching any of the rats, the remote access Trojans, the things that are eavesdropping on you?" The answer is probably no, especially on your smartphone or tablet. And that's the whole idea around Snoopwall, to help us figure out who's snooping on you and how to block them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a pretty important topic to talk about. I was reading a report. I think you guys actually put it out the other day. It was talking about how half of the application developers out there literally spend $0 on security. Is that a true statistic?
Yes, and you know what? We're not talking about the Candy Crush developer, which is, you know, a different issue. We're talking about Amazon and eBay and Bank of America, you know, and all these companies that offer us services where there's payments required. That makes me really nervous. You know, if there's no security even in Uber's app, which Uber's the big one in the news. I think Uber will be the beginning of the kind of the snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone said, "Well, it's always a breach in Windows, or it's always a breach in a back-end server behind a firewall, so it's got to be in a company's network, in their database, right? We've heard of TJ Maxx. That was a SQL attack behind their firewall."
Mm-hmm.
But it all started from the parking lot of Marshalls, by the way. Anyway, you get behind a corporate firewall and you steal data. And we've heard that the last 100 banks breached with Russian banks and all that Kaspersky discovered was remote access Trojans.
Mm-hmm.
Sony's breach, a rat, a remote access Trojan. The story goes on and on. But at some point, people are going to realize that that's not the place anymore, and that malware has already planted itself in the form of a trusting app, JD, that you and I might accidentally trust on our smartphone.
Right. Well, and I think I want to get into this Uber thing because we're really hitting the nail on the head here. I gotta jump to the chat room really quick because someone just posted a question wondering if you know anything about Bitdefender, if it's any good for Android. And I know I don't like asking real specific stuff like that because you're work for a different company. But any thoughts on Bitdefender as a bolster against stuff like this for Android?
Now, I like Bitdefender. I think they're actually a Ukrainian company, by the way. And, you know, a lot of malware and hackers and cyber criminals are out of the Ukraine. And Bitdefender has made what they call a SDK, a software development toolkit. So you might find that many antivirus products, you may not even know it, but that one of their secondary scanners is Bitdefender. I run Bitdefender, but I also run five other tools, and I find that each one we'll find something different at some point in time.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, I want to get into this Uber thing because, first of all, I don't know if – we haven't really covered this on the air yet, so there may be people out there who have no idea what we're even talking about with the Uber breach. So hey, let's start right there. If you could just kind of elucidate on what happened with the Uber breach, and then we'll talk about Uber's response to it and what is the more likely event that actually took place with this breach.
So the big news, right? Uber's saying, "Hey, wait a minute, our servers, our database is secure. No remote access Trojans got into our building. Nobody hacked us. No data theft, no evidence of data theft on our back end network." Now, what Uber's done is genius. they don't have any physical assets in a way. You know, what's their business model? It's a database to link two people together.
Right.
You and the and a driver in a car. And it's ingenious, and it's made them, I think, a $1 billion company overnight.
Yeah.
They don't have any, I mean, they don't have the cars. They don't have taxi medallions. They just have a great app that geolocates you on your phone and help, and has your credit card stored in the app and helps you get a person who's agreed to become an Uber employee. And all the becoming an Uber employee is done electronically. Anyone can become an Uber driver and make about $60,000 a year. If they were out of work yesterday or today, by tomorrow, they can. If they have a car, they can be making at least $60,000 a year on average, driving around, picking people up, and replacing taxis.
Is that
which
true?
Is really
Man,
upsetting
I'm in the wrong business. Dang, I didn't know that. Okay, mental note, check out Uber. Okay, please continue.
Yeah, mental note, even become a part-time Uber driver.
Right?
And take
seriously.
An extra 30 in, right?
Yeah.
And the way Uber works is when you go into the app, it says, and there's they have some competition like Lyft, L-Y-F-T, but when you get into the app, it says, hey, there's taxis in the area in some states because Uber's done some deals where they'll find you a taxi and they get a little kickback. But in general, it's the UberX, the small car. It can be a Prius. It can be a little car, you know, a little Ford Focus, all the way up to the normal Uber car, which is a four-door bigger car, all the way, you know, sedan, all the way up to you can get a luxury Uber vehicle. Somebody might own, you know, a fancy Chrysler 300 with leather seats, and you get picked up in that, and you feel like you're getting an executive limo ride for about half the price.
Right.
So it's pretty cool. Here's the problem. Uber says, wait, we've never been hacked. But how come on the black market last week, about 50,000, and there may be more, Uber accounts are being sold on the dark web for a buck each?
I mean, that's the question, isn't it? If Uber itself says our system is secure, you got to wonder how this mobile information is getting out there, don't you?
So the question is, if it didn't happen at Uber's headquarters, but it's a username, it's a password, and by the way, they guarantee that these are valid records. You will get a refund or credit to buy more records if in the black market.
Oh, so
if you're not valid.
If you buy one for a dollar and it doesn't pan out, you can get your dollar back?
Yeah.
That's nice of the criminals, I guess, huh?
Yeah. So you buy it for a dollar, and suddenly you're stealing someone's identity. You're getting a ride in an Uber vehicle. You're using someone else's credit card. You're committing fraud, and you're spending, you know, $30 to $50 of someone else's money on a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Uber will say it's not our fault because our database was never hacked. And consumers, you and me, JD, will say it's not our fault because we're just a customer. We're giving you, Uber, our credit card. Where are we putting the credit card data in?
Well, you're putting it into your phone, ostensibly, correct?
So doesn't that mean that the point of sale system, the POS, like in a New York taxi, you sit in the back of the cab, the guy's got his semi-bulletproof glass now because he's paranoid,
right.
And in the back of the cab is this Verifone or other competitive device called a POS, point of sale solution,
mm-hmm.
that you swipe your credit card in, you hit a button for a tip for the taxi driver, 20% or higher, he's going to lock the doors on you in New York, and away you go, right? And
yeah.
The cab driver sees all of this, but he doesn't get your credit card information. He never has any way to take it anymore. Now, that point of sale terminal is almost like an ATM machine. You're sitting in a secured space, mm-hmm. the back of the cab. You're sliding your card in, and it's using an encrypted protocol to send that data to other countries.
And there's a camera in the cab, too.
Other countries, I'm sorry. To right. send that data to the credit card agency, sorry.
Mm-hmm. And there's a cab.
I was thinking of the Uber phone.
Oh.
Now, on the phone, it's other countries, and it may be Ukraine, by the way, but we don't know yet.
Okay, so basically what happened then is the POS system is the app. Is that how this works? The Uber app itself is the POS system that's been compromised here?
There we go. See, I jumped ahead. I had too much coffee this morning.
That's okay. That's okay.
So the POS, so your phone is an insecure device. It's like sitting in the back of the taxi with 30 or 40 people you don't really know watching you pin in everything on your credit card, right?
Right.
So your phone has 30 or 40 apps, and one of the apps is Uber, and the point of sale terminal is the Uber app. So whose fault is it that your phone's infected, JD?
Well, I guess I'd have to bite the bullet and say it was mine, wouldn't I?
Right on.
Yeah.
It's your fault, right? You're the bad guy. You're
right.
The criminal. Wait a minute. You're the customer. You'll never be responsible. It's not your fault that you bought a phone And the way they sold you the phone was, they said, JD, we've got so many apps in our store. Are you going to get a Microsoft phone with 50 or 100 apps in their store? No, Microsoft's working their butt off to get more apps in their store so that people will want their device. Mm-hmm. You're going to get an Android phone with a million apps to choose from.
Right.
You're going to get an Apple iPhone with a million apps to choose from. You're going to have 30 or 40 of these apps in your smartphone. And guess what? That's, we got suckered. These apps are designed to spy on us. Now, is it our fault? In a way, yeah, but guess what? Even if it's your fault, JD, that one of your apps is spying on Uber, a cool app that you like a lot, but you didn't really dig in deep on who is this company that made this Bible app? You know, why is it sending information to Russia?
Right.
But guess what? It's not your fault. It may be your fault, but ultimately it's not your responsibility. It's Uber's responsibility to provide a secure POS system.
So what would Uber have to do to rectify this issue now? I mean, they're going to have to wrap their app in some sort of thing like Snoopwall to make this more effective, or what?
Yeah, I mean, wrap it or harden it. There's five ways to do it. Spend 6 months rebuilding your app and harden it.
Mm-hmm.
Get a technology like Snoopwall's or our competitors like Trustier at IBM or InAuth or ArcSan. I mean, I don't care whose they choose. I'm an Uber customer. I mean, I'd like them to buy my technology, but the bottom line is you have to harden that app. As a consumer, I've put my credit card trust in your app. I don't care that it's on my infected phone. I care that it's in Uber's app and they didn't do a good job protecting their app.
Right.
It's their fault. It's their responsibility.
Wow. But at this point in time, they're not really going to claim any responsibility. Have they even come out and said, okay, we've got an issue that we're going to deal with, or are they still in full denial mode at this point?
They're in full denial mode, and it
right.
really bothers me. And the thing is, the good news is, even though you and I are going to, like, you know, your listeners are going to, they're going to lower the volume, the Federal Reserve. But one of the guys in the Federal Reserve, in a risk team, is upset about this, which is kind of good news because they have power. You and I don't. The Federal Reserve just announced, the Atlanta Group, that they're very concerned about retail payment risk in smartphones. And can you and I convince Uber to fix the app for us consumers without filing a lawsuit against them?
Probably not.
No, but the FDIC, Visa, the Federal Reserve, somebody big has to say to them, hold on a minute, guys. You're putting a POS terminal in consumers' hands.
Mm-hmm.
You can't blame the consumer that their device is full of apps that they loved because nobody gets it that the apps are eavesdropping on you. It's your fault that you didn't harden your POS terminal, and you're going to either, you know, I would say slap on the wrist, maybe fine them, maybe do something that wakes them up that they have to make a better, stronger, safer experience if you're going to take credit card data from consumers.
Well, and if they're making that much money, it seems to me like they would want to protect their reputation. You know what I mean? If they're going to be the replacement for the taxis and this is going to be the next big thing in transportation, it'd be real nice if we could all be a little confident in it, don't you think?
Not only that, but this is the tip of the iceberg. JD, I could show you 8,000 banks in America who have apps on smartphones, how easy it is to steal user accounts, passwords, credentials, check deposits, everything from bank apps. All 8,000 are vulnerable on Android and iPhone. The same goes to all retail apps. So while I'm blaming Uber, I'm blaming all of them. They're all vulnerable. Remember you brought up the statistic in the beginning, you know, zero budget for security
right.
on mobile?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Their whole budget for security, Amazon, you know, E-Trade, you name it. Their budget for security is in a back room with a firewall and an intrusion prevention appliance and antivirus and all this kind of stuff. They don't really get it about moving the experience to the phone or the mm-hmm. tablet.
Well, I gotta kinda be looking at all of this like good news then. I mean, it's obviously unfortunate that so many Uber users were compromised, but if this doesn't bring it into the national spotlight that there are other applications being developed out there that people have on their phones that can come in and screw around with applications, you know, like Uber that say, hey, you know, our stuff's all secure. That's a great spotlight to be putting on this issue because it just opens up the idea that, you know, if there's an app out there that's soaking up your Uber information, then why wouldn't they be going after Bank of America or your Amazon that you know, or your eBay or PayPal or whatever? And wouldn't some of those other apps that have that capability of doing it with Uber be the same apps that have the capability of, you know, rifling through your banking information?
what if they're already doing it under our noses right now?
Oof. That's frightening to think about.
JD, the new attack vector, cybercrime, has already moved to mobile. I call it M-crime, mobile crime. Mm-hmm. It's already there. If you can't keep using social engineering, spear phishing, and remote access Trojans to break into back-end systems, at some point, people are going to wake up and say, hey, the Sony breach, spear phishing attack, remote access Trojan, check. Name a bank breach, the 100 banks breach, spear phishing attack, remote access Trojan, the one that Kaspersky uncovered recently, $1 billion in theft. They use remote access Trojans to eavesdrop on these bank networks. Do you think those banks are going to be as easily victimized for spear phishing attacks and remote access Trojans?
I don't know why they wouldn't be.
If I were them, I would say, hey, we learned a lesson. We're not going to accept attachments in our email. We're going to use text-only emails. I mean, you know, maybe they're going to get a little old-fashioned looking, or maybe encrypted-only emails, and they're not going to accept attachments through email anymore, and that'll solve their problem. They're not going to get breached through an attachment with a remote access Trojan.
Okay.
So the cyber criminals already figured this out, and they knew that that attack vector will only last so long. So they started writing wonderful apps.
Right.
Let's look at some apps and let's question the apps.
Let's do it.
JD, how many apps would you say you'd have on a smartphone if you weren't a little paranoid about security?
I'd probably say between 15 and 20. Doesn't that sound about average?
Yeah, and if you have kids, the kids probably double that number.
Yeah, with games and things. Mm-hmm.
So let's say 15 to 20 for us, maybe 30 to 40, you know, or whatever for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever clicked on these free apps? Have you ever clicked, or do you know anyone who's clicked on an advertisement in any of these apps?
No, I mean, I would assume that most people like myself avoid those ads like the plague, because I don't want to, you don't know where you're going to get taken, you know, from those free apps.
So you get a free app and you never click on an ad. So if nobody, and I haven't met anyone who said they purposely clicked on an ad in a free app. So if some development team, say 12 to 15 developers, quality assurance testers, you know, all these people got together in a room and said, let's build an app, and the app's 5 to 30 megabytes. Say it's the Bible app or a QR reader or a password manager or a game like Flappy Birds or Angry Birds, although Flappy Birds was one developer. But let's just say a team put together this app, and it's a complex app, and it's pretty powerful, and it's got advertisement network engines embedded to make money, and nobody ever clicks the ads. Don't you think they'd be out of business by now?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, where are they getting revenue from, if not that?
Where are they getting revenue? That is the question of the day. Where do you think they're getting revenue?
Well, I would imagine, since we're having this discussion, that they're probably clandestinely taking information from your other apps and selling that on the open market, perhaps? I don't know. Just a hunch.
So, this is very good. So you go into these dark webs and you find things for sale for 50, you find things for sale on the dark web, and you'll find them for sale for up to $1 a record. And it will be username and password. It'll be access to an account, maybe an Uber.
Uh-huh.
It'll be access to a bank account, maybe a Bank of America. And it may say, we guarantee you'll find a user's bank account info, or we guarantee you'll find access to live credit card information, or you'll get your dollar back. And, of course, people buy these in bulk. They buy 10,000 at a time in criminal rings. They don't buy one record for a dollar. And then they monetize you, and they steal $50 or $100, or they buy medical equipment that's shipped to the wrong address and sold on eBay later.
Right.
I mean, there are things they do with your record to monetize you, and it's fraud, and it's billions and billions of dollars in fraud every year. Somebody's got to pay for this fraud, JD.
Well, I think we're all paying for it right now. I got to ask you a couple quick questions from the chat room before we have to go to this break. One person was asking, what are you apprehensive about some of the technology that you've created becoming illegal under the United States government? You know, with the cybersecurity bill that they just passed, we're not allowed to send Bitcoin to Edward Snowden anymore, although some guy did do that just the other day, just and actually put his phone number out there and said, please, Barack, come arrest me for supporting Edward Snowden, which I fully support, by the way. send your Bitcoin to Edward Snowden in face of this stupid cybersecurity bill. But people in the chat room are curious, you know, what happens if the countervalence measures that you guys have developed become illegal? Or do you think that might actually happen or what?
It's a very interesting question with kind of a multifaceted answer.
Okay.
Let's step back for a second, if you have time before you go to break, and maybe we could make it a multi-part answer. But the first part of the answer is, think about the letter from the CEO of Cisco to President Obama. He said, would you please have the NSA stop putting back doors in our equipment? Cisco's actually working to have their equipment shipped to the wrong address on purpose, and they're doing all these things to circumvent eavesdropping being embedded in their equipment. It's affected their business. International customers won't buy their product anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge revenue issue to America if we let this continue to happen. And can you stand up to not putting back doors in your systems? That's the biggest question.
Right. Well, I have
more on it, but I don't know if you're going to break.
We got about 30 seconds. You just kind of have my brain spinning right now because I don't know if you saw the, I mean, I know I deal with pen testers. I've got some friends who are pretty good pen testers. I know how to run a Linux box and things like that. But some of the things that these guys are doing nowadays, I was reading the other day that they are able to now hack a computer that's not connected to a network. As long as they can get a little Trojan on it, they can use some sort of app to increase and decrease the temperature of the actual CPU and then use the 1% increase or 1% decrease as alphanumeric code or however, what is the Unicode that they use, and then actually hack a system that way. It would take a long time, but it just never ceases to amaze me the links that these people will go to get your information. We are getting ready to go to this break. Gary Milievsky is our guest today. We are doing a backward show this morning. We're starting with the guests, so don't worry out there. We're going to get to the news here in about a half an hour. We're going to go to this 3-minute break. We'll come right back, and Gary Milievsky will be joining us again for about another half hour, and we'll keep getting into this a little bit deeper. I think that's a good point, though. People are concerned about the things that you're doing becoming essentially illegal in the long run, Gary. So we'll come back and we'll chat about it.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Like a cancer that silently spreads.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. Yes, this is the first hour. We are live right now. Everybody calm down out there. I know we're not talking about news right now because I made a mistake. When I booked Gary, I forgot that he lived in a different state that I live in. So we had some wires crossed, but graciously enough, he has agreed to take some time out of his schedule and do the interview early. So that's what we're doing right now. And I got to tell you, Gary, we are hitting some chords with the people out in the chat room because the questions are just coming in like mad. We were talking about the potential illegality or the making of your system or systems like yours illegal under the law. And you had kind of touched on the fact that, that there would be some pretty big financial constraints to actually being able to do that. But I wonder if you wanted to kind of extrapolate on any of those points that you were going to make on that before we move on to some other questions.
Yeah, so I think the first point is for very, very successful companies in America that's created the internet, the networking equipment, routers, ISPs, they all have backdoors. They've all been connected to, whether it's even Google, who got funded by InQtel, the CIA's venture fund.
We're not supposed to say that on the air. That's secret stuff.
Let me step back. it's public knowledge, but nobody talks about it.
Right.
So you've got Google, you've got the NSA, I mean, you've got everybody, the FBI, I mean, you've got all these engines to spy and collect and eavesdrop, and it's crazy. And it's funny, my dad, an old military vet from the U.S. Navy, said, "Well, I don't have anything to hide, so it doesn't bother me, son." I said, "Dad, what if you were running for office and they found some record that you didn't like? Or what if they spied on you while you're, you know, going to the doctor for a heart test or something? And what if that was made public without your permission?" I mean, the kinds of things that can be done against citizens when the data is collected, if the person who collects it is not trustworthy, is the issue. Where does the data go? Who has oversight over it? It's just crazy right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the real issue for Snoopwall, JD, is I'm trying to stop cyber criminals, cyber espionage by enemy nation states, we could call it, cyber crime, and online predators eavesdropping on our kids. I can't, in the technology I've developed, block the NSA. They own the cell towers. I mean, the most I can do is stop the criminals from stealing your bank account and help people waken up to the fact that they've given up their privacy and their smartphone. But I think the only way to get the NSA and others to change their behavior, it goes all the way back to Congress, and that's a big, big challenge.
Right. That's much larger than Snoopwall or Red Pill Reports, I'll tell you that.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let me ask you just a couple of quick questions. I do want to go look at some apps with you on the Play Store just so we can kind of explain to people the process that you go through when you're looking at an app and saying, okay, these are some glaring red flags in the face. But before I do that, I just want to touch on a couple of really quick questions. We had talked about Bitdefender earlier for Android. Someone was wondering about your opinion of Malwarebytes, if you wouldn't mind giving your opinion on that one.
So I like Malwarebytes. I'm actually running it next to Bitdefender on my Windows computer.
Right.
Along with Super Anti-Spyware and a couple others. One of my favorites is EMSISOFT. But as to what will work on your phone, none of them will work on your phone. None of them. And I'll tell you why. If you really want to know the industry's dirty little secret, I think we talked about it in the past. So if I don't have a big app store, you're not going to want to buy my phone, right? You're not going to want to use my operating system if I don't have a lot of apps.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear the operating system GEOS, GEOS?
No, uh-uh.
It was amazing. It blew away Windows 3.0. It blew away Windows 2.0. It was incredible. I think it might have even been based on X Windows. It was just incredible.
Hmm.
They went out of business. They had no apps for their platform, not many. And Microsoft put all their wherewithal to put them out of business.
Right.
Today, this is many years ahead in the future. Here we are with app stores that probably have a million apps. So there are so many apps out there. Now, Google and Apple say they scrub for malware. Give me a break. That is such a pile of malarkey. If they scrub for malware, then why does the Holy Bible app send data to Russia, confirmed by John McAfee?
That's a pretty good question, yeah.
I mean, it's written in English. Why is it sending info to Russia? Who in Russia needed to write an English version of the Bible?
I don't know. Makes me afraid to use my phone for anything, to be perfectly honest.
So the industry's dirty little secret is that you can build an app to spy on anyone as long as you use an ad network that you're never going to use anyway, like Google's AdMob. So they love you. Welcome to the Play Store. Apple, welcome to iTunes. Join us. Make a great app that people will love. Great, you're using our ad network. You're, you know, analyzing consumer behavior. We love you. That's malware, dude.
Wow. Okay. I'm starting to get a picture of what's actually going on here now. But we had a question, too, about a rooted phone. Are there any benefits to rooting your Android phone and kind of getting underneath, you know, the software that it comes with? Or are you just asking for more trouble that way?
Yes and no. If you're smart enough to install and manage a version of IP tables on a rooted Android, I'm not sure about a rooted iPhone, mm-hmm. you know, jailbreaking. But if you're smart enough to manage your own firewall, it's hard to get a firewall that works on any of these devices without rooting. So there is a benefit, but there's also a risk that if you've rooted it, you've now opened it up to any app that you install gaining root-level permission on the device, which means if someone wrote something to get it root and you didn't know it, they're going to read your contacts. They're going to read things. They're going to put encrypted files. They're going to turn your phone into a piece of a botnet if they want to.
Right. Okay. How dangerous is the botnet these day and ages, just out of curiosity? I mean, is that going to be like the next big thing, you think? These people are going to basically take over a bunch of devices and then use them in a group format somehow?
Well, they've already done an SMS botnet on mobile. And in Hong Kong, they had no cybersecurity division in their police department. Now they have a $6 million budget because there was a fake version of Angry Birds in the written in Cantonese, you know, non-Google Play Store. There's all these stores where they'll say, download an app here, you know, App Central versus Google Play, and same for the iPhone. And a lot of people, especially the Chinese, if it's in their language, they're going to trust it. So they'll go to a site in their language and they'll download an app and it's malware.
Hmm.
One of the apps was actually advertising for people in Hong Kong, like, you know, come to my noodle shop, get 50 cents off for noodles today. And the app developer was using your phone, if you were in Hong Kong, through the fake Angry Birds. You'd still play Angry Birds, but they wrote malicious code on top of it to send SMS messages to all of your friends in your contact list every 10 seconds.
No. Wow. And that all for
Can you believe that? And, of course, they were getting paid because businesses were saying, hey, thanks, we got so much ad traffic.
Oh, my God.
And then people found out what was happening, and guess what? They weren't – a lot of them weren't on – this was in 2013. A lot of people were not – in Hong Kong were not on a unlimited texting service like we have in the U.S. So they were getting bills going, what the heck? Why do I have such a huge phone bill with all this SMS messaging? I never sent all those messages, and then that's what happened. They discovered that it was kind of a malware botnet through SMS.
Right. And who ended up actually being responsible in terms of, you know, paying all those SMS bills? Did the end user end up having to bite that bullet?
No, what happened was the Hong Kong police, they found the app developer manager who was at an advertising crime network, and they arrested them. I haven't tracked it since, but the consumers were finally not responsible. But somebody has to pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think their phone providers ate the risk on that and the losses.
Well, and that's another kind of a good thing, though, because again, we want the larger entities to be the ones who are actually have to take the hit on this, because they're the only people in power to actually do something about it, you know. So I guess there is a silver lining if you can step back and look at it a little bit, regardless of, or barring the fact that you got a huge phone bill, you know, the other side of that coin, I guess, would be okay to look at. one more question from the browser, and then I do want to hop over to the Play Store, but just for advice for people out there using regular old machines, what's the best browser that people should be using right now, Gary?
Definitely not Chrome.
Definitely not Chrome. I got to
look, I like it too, but who wrote it?
NSA. I mean, Google.
there you go. Google should just have three letters in their name, to be honest with you.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, monetize by ad networks and monetize by analytics and get paid on all sides of the table. It's unbelievable.
Okay.
Yeah, Chrome's fast. Chrome's great, but it tracks everything you do everywhere you go. It's risky. I think Firefox with plugins that block ad networks and a few other things is a pretty cool browser. I think Opera is totally off the radar, a very fast browser. OPERA, very cool browser.
Okay, I'm going to have to go look into. I've used Opera before, but I haven't used it. Is it similar to Firefox in that you can get plugins and things like that for Opera as well, or is it more of a Linux-based operating system?
It's a multi-platform browser. It'll run on all different platforms, and
Okay.
It's very fast. I'm not sure about plugins. I think it has just enough to enjoy it, like Flash Player and a few other things.
Right, but if I use it, I guess the only thing I really like about Chrome is that I'm a big fan of bookmarks, and I like being able to like close my Chrome on one machine and go to my laptop or whatever and still have all my bookmarks there. Is that something I can do in Opera? I know it's not your business, but I'm just curious.
Good question. I would go to opera.com and find out. They have computer,
okay,
mobile, tablet versions. They're multi-platform. It's a tiny, tiny browser. It doesn't take up a lot of space. And they have developer tools out there. It'd be interesting to find out. That's a great question.
Okay.
But it's less of a target. For example, Adobe Acrobat is the best way to infect a computer because it's a bloated piece of accidental malware. I mean, Adobe Acrobat, you just write some malware, attach it to a PDF, or just infect, take advantage of a vulnerability in Acrobat. So what do a lot of people do? They look for alternative readers like, what's that one? It's Foxit Reader, Foxit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's harder to infect a player to play a PDF file that's so tiny that doesn't have all these extensions that you actually can read the PDF without getting infected. So alternative browsers, alternative viewers is a good way to reduce risk.
Roger that. Okay, and then I'm just getting a little word from the chat room that Opera does use Flash and it does have plugins. So I'm going to go ahead and I think after today's show, I'm probably going to get rid of Chrome and bite the bullet and get into Opera, and then I'll have more to report on that. Why don't we hop over to the Android App Store on Google and just kind of peruse some stuff and just see how nasty the water really is over there, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, and by the way, the first thing I found on Opera is my way to organize bookmarks. It mm-hmm. has a synchronization feature.
Oh, beautiful.
Multi-platform.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. That's a winner to me then. If you recommend it, brother, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? There used to be a day when people would write less code to get things done, you know, as my little joke about flashlight apps.
Right.
Flashlight apps are the number one piece of malware on your smartphone, both Android and iPhone, a third party. A lot of people get mad at me for saying it, and then, of course, I say, well, if you got an iPhone, just use the built-in widget. If you don't mind Apple spying on you, you're fine with their widget, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so small code is better. We wrote 100, or now it's up to 200K, but we wrote a 200 kilobyte open source free flashlight app called Privacy Flashlight. It's open source code. You can read the source code. You can see it's not malware. So we could start with flashlights. We could start with QR readers, Bibles, whatever you want to look at.
Whatever. Let's just pick one. Do you want to start with? Let's start with the Bible. I think that seems like that would be one that everybody should trust right off the bat, right? I mean, it's a Bible app. How awful could a Bible app be, right?
Right. Passover, Easter, let's start with the Bible. So go over to Google Play, which would be play.google.com. And at the top of the search field, type in Bible.
Okie dokie. There are lots of them. Holy cow.
Yeah, hit see more, and you're going to see that there are lots
of
Bible.
There's a thousand of them at least just on this first page. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just randomly, you know what, randomly pick anyone you want. It doesn't matter to me, but I just found one for fun that I like that's just, I've never looked at before. But the person's name was a Korean name, so I wanted to look at it. But you want to start with Life Church TV, the number one Bible app?
Life Church TV. Let me look up that one just so I get it directly here.
That's the first one.
Oh, and I got Bible. I got a whole bunch of stuff, man. That wasn't,
okay. Well, first it'll have a name like Bible, and then below the name it'll tell you who made it.
Okay. Life Church TV, Bible. Got it on it.
Okay. So let's scroll through this one, and let's scroll down. And there are four things I always look for to determine if an app on my smartphone is malware. And, JD, my tips for you are real simple. It's spring cleaning time. Delete the 30 or 40 apps you're not using. If you're down to 5 apps, you're probably doing it right.
Can I interject
there?
I got to interject also because there's another thing in spring cleaning that you should do. Go into your network connections and delete all of the connections that you have not been in that building for 2 years that your computer or your phone is looking for every time it goes into Starbucks. That's a really big the point, don't you think? That's a big thing
absolutely
that we should all do. Okay.
That's a great point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why not get a pop-up to remind you that you're getting on someone else's network, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, looking at Life Church TV Bible, it was updated on April 2nd. We scroll down, and what I like to look at is four things. At the bottom, you see additional information right above the word similar, where it shows other Bible apps near the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see more from this developer. So this has had 50 to 100 million downloads.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Now let's look at permissions. Click view details.
Got it.
You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This app has access to device and app history, reading sensitive log data of your device.
Now let's break that down into English for people. What does that mean when they see device and app history, read sensitive log data?
It can determine things that are stored on your device that will tell it about you and your activities. For example, other apps you run, when you run those other apps, things that you do when you've dialed the phone, anything that's stored in the logs.
Okay.
So accessing sensitive log data means this app is not just a Bible reader. A PDF is a read file, right? This is an active application reading device data and doing more than just flipping through pages of the Bible.
Wow.
In addition, it finds accounts on this device under identity. And look at this one. It reads your contacts.
Yeah, what's that about? Why does the Bible need to read my contacts?
Well, maybe it wants to spread the good word, JD.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it wants to SMS message all your friends.
Well, okay. You know, the Lord does work in mysterious ways, doesn't he?
Now, JD, it needs to know where you're located. What if you're walking into a strip club? Maybe it's going to pop up a chapter of the Bible to remind you to behave better.
Wow. Yeah, but it does say that. Location, approximate location based on your network.
What? And what if you're taking pictures in that strip club? Look, photos, media, and files. I know you're not going to do it, JD, but
and
come
your
on.
USB storage. Unbelievable.
Well, if it notices you took some bad photos, maybe you're doing something wrong there.
That's right.
Right? So mm-hmm. To me, this is a piece of creepware or spyware disguised as the Bible.
That more than 50 million people are actively using on their devices right now.
And keep going. Read the phone status and identity. Receive data from the internet. Why does the Bible need to send and receive full network access, run at startup, send sticky broadcasts?
What's a sticky broadcast?
Prevent the device from sleeping?
Whoa, and it doesn't even let your device turn off. Holy cow.
Creepware alert.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so that one we can stick a fork in it because that one's done.
Now, what if you had to pay 99 cents for a version of the Bible that had no network permissions and was actually just the Bible?
I think that would be worth it given what we know now, don't you?
Yeah, I think I almost have to go write Privacy Bible. It's just an app that displays the Bible.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it should be.
Wow. Okay, so that one.
Number one, permissions. Number two, is I want to know their privacy policy. Okay. Now, do you see developer over on the right and it says visit website, email, and then privacy policy?
I do at the bottom. Yep.
Let's right click and open the privacy policy in a different tab.
Okay.
Okay. This privacy policy was revised in 2012. Well, that's a red flag.
Right.
And then it says what we collect, unique device ID and GPS location, cookies, log information, user communications, third-party sites. This scares me. This scares the bejesus out of me.
I mean, seriously, right? This is creep. I mean, it puts the creep right in creepware, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, John McAfee pointed this out. I need to give him credit. I was never looking at Bible apps for malware. And then if you email the developer, how do they respond to a question? Hey, guys, what are you doing with the following permissions? Send them an email, JD, and see how they respond.
Right.
Tell them you're doing a story. Invite them on the air. I'd love to learn more about these guys.
I will totally do that. I think that's a great idea because there are some pretty glaring questions that are coming out of this right now. I mean, this is the sticky broadcast thing, the fact that they're reading your contacts. That just doesn't make any sense. You know, that doesn't make any sense. And who's paying for all that?
And here's the really weird part. When you go to their website, remember we're going to do permissions, privacy policy, email the developer, and go to their website. Those are the four things you need to do for every app on your smartphone.
Okay.
The homepage of YouVersion, the developer of this app, says a free Bible on your phone, tablet, or computer. It is a simple ad-free Bible that brings God's work to you daily.
Man, every time I see that word ad-free from now on, you're going to give me the heebie-jeebies, brother.
Yeah, scroll down. Installs to date on smartphones and tablets, 176,687,000. And it continues to rise every second.
And why does it say
what are they doing with – who wrote this?
Yeah.
What are they doing with this?
Yeah, that's a great question. My question is why are there 1,092 different versions available? I guess is that for different languages and different countries?
You tell me.
Man, these people are just – they must be making a killing selling our info though.
There you go. What are they doing with our info?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so that's the number one app for the Bible app. We just looked at number one. Because we're going to run out of time, let's go type in QR.
Okay.
For QR readers, everybody's using QR codes, right?
Yes, absolutely. Wave of the future.
Let's go to the second one on the QR results called QR Droid Code Scanner from Droid La.
Okay.
Droid LA.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to scroll down and I'm going to look at permissions with 10 million to 50 million downloads. Why does a QR reader need to read my contacts, read my device, web bookmarks and history, modify storage? Take pictures is fine, but send and receive information over the internet. Control the flashlight, control the camera. I mean, there's some very interesting permissions in this app, and I wonder where the company is located. Let's look at their privacy policy. Let's visit their website. What if we find out they're in China?
What if we find out they're in China? Okay, I'm on trying to figure out which side I went to here. Privacy policy. Okay,
yeah.
Privacy policy.
These guys are actually located in Tortola, British Virgin Islands.
Hmm.
Interesting. I don't know why they're in the British Virgin Islands. They're collecting a lot of data. I'd say this is a little bit creepy for a QR reader. QR reader is supposed to read a QR code and let you visit a website on your own, in your own web, you know, app. It's supposed to give you the URL. That's about it. We could do the same with the first one from Scan Inc. That one has 10 million to 50 million. Okay, they're in Utah. They look a little bit safer, but who are they? And what are their permissions?
Mm-hmm.
Even more permissions, including your geolocation.
Wow.
The fourth one from Pickwick. Let's see who these guys are, because Droid Law has two of them. These guys are doing all the same and more. They're reading your call log. A QR reader that reads your phone history of the calls you made?
Well, that last one, I'm still catching up on the last one, trying to go through all those privacy policies. And one of them was that they can turn on and off your Wi-Fi when they want to. Which
wonderful.
Oh,
wonderful.
Good times.
Good times, man. So from QR readers to Bible apps to flashlight apps, you know, some of them are definitely made in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, out of all these apps you're seeing in the store, who has the time? There's like 50 QR readers. Who has the time to write a QR reader as an app? What do they get out of it for giving it to you for free?
Well, I think we know the answer to that question at this point, too. And I would draw everybody's attention to an article that just came out, I think last week, was talking about how your data had been shared more than 5,000 times using Facebook, Go Launcher, Groupon, and 7 other applications. And that 5,000 times of your location being shared was in 14 days. So it's not just the ability to go in and cultivate your information or to send your friends, SMSs or anything like that. It's also just, absolute, complete knowing everything about you almost, you know, and because it's not just one app that you've got to worry about. Some of these people have 40 apps and all 40 of them could be doing different things at the same time, you know.
JD, who is the product? The phone, the app, or you?
Oh, well, in this day and age, my friend, I am the product. That is the name of the game these days.
So my big recommendation is people start learning countervalence, study counter-surveillance. I think in one of our times together on air, we talked about it, and I brought up the fact that in the 50s, the CIA hired 2 of the top magicians to teach them how to hide and pass data in secret.
Did they
and
really?
As you talk about bitcoins, you know, and there's a book. The book is out there, the CIA's covert something. I can't remember the name of the book, but I list the book in my free course. If you go to snoopwall.com/free countervalence 101, mm-hmm. you'll learn some of the techniques that the CIA used in the 50s and even today. We need to start to hide our data or it's going to be stolen.
I could not possibly agree with you more. And I'll tell you, just taking the time out of your schedule to walk us through how to actually investigate an app, that's a service that no one's ever provided for me before. That seems like that should be a high school class. This is how you protect yourself out in the world, but nobody's doing that. I just got to tell you, man, that's a life-changing bit of information for a lot of people out there. And I really, really appreciate you and all the hard work that you're doing out there, Gary.
Thank you, JD. And back to the question, have you ever clicked an ad in an app?
Never.
And I ask all your listeners, have you ever clicked an ad in your app? No, none of us have. We don't. Nobody gives you free apps with ad networks that you never click and not monetize you somehow.
That's it.
And the way they monetize you is to eavesdrop on other activities to create a profile on you that may be sold on the black market. We called it PII, personally identifiable information.
Unbelievable. We are the product, ladies and gentlemen, and it's all happening through our phones. Gary Milevsky was our guest this morning. He's got to go to a meeting, but Gary, thank you very much for being here today.
JD, thank you.
Yeah, brother. We'll be right back, guys. We got plenty of news. Stick it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I really, really appreciate you guys kind of bearing with us today as we kind of go through the background or the backwards day, upside down day, whatever we want to call it. I had so much fun talking to Gary. I hope you guys pulled a lot away from that. I'll tell you, going through some of those apps and looking at the permissions and what those things are actually doing, that's some scary stuff. And especially in light of the Uber breach that we were talking about a little earlier, that's definitely something to be aware of. And I want to put it out there again, if you've got a smartphone and you are one of those people that when you connect to a new Wi-Fi connection somewhere, say you go to Starbucks and you connect to their Wi-Fi, you know, that that Wi-Fi connection is stored in your phone forever. And every time your phone goes anywhere, it's throwing that out. It's saying, hey, is this network around? I'd certainly love to connect to this network. So other people, hackers, can mask a network to look like the ones that your phones are looking for. That is a very easy way for somebody to get involved with your device. And you wouldn't even know it because your device is already set to automatically reconnect to those preferred networks. So again, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about spring cleaning. I went back through my phone a long time ago. I've got a rooted Android that I don't use as a phone anymore. It's kind of my, mobile pen testing kit at this point. When I first started realizing exactly what was capable out there, in terms of hacking your networks, that's such a glaring opportunity for people out there to take advantage of. If you don't get rid of those preferred networks, especially if it's like you went to a class reunion or something in your high school and you got Wi-Fi for 5 minutes, or you went to a wedding and you got Wi-Fi for 5 minutes, well, all that stuff is still stored on your phone and is still susceptible to being snooped. And it's just really good advice coming from Gary today. Anyways, I suppose we probably ought to get along. Get the hitch out of our get along here and get along with the show here, because there is a lot of news to cover today. Appreciate you guys all hanging out in the chat room. I completely agree. Kevin's show is my very favorite show on the network. Kev Baker in the chat room right now. Everybody say hi to Kev because he's freaking rad. I cannot tell you how much fun I have Friday nights getting to hang out with him and Marty. And anyways, moving on here, I wanted to check over some chat room because there was a couple of people saying some things in here. So give me 2 seconds. Blah, 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 hibbity blah. Okay, nothing super important that needs to be related. Let's hop into the news, because typically we do the news in the first hour and I didn't get to do that today. So I'm feeling a little out of sorts. But let's talk about Iran, and let's talk about this nuclear accord right now. We've been talking about this, obviously, for a couple of weeks. They came to some kind of massive conclusion over the weekend, but the new indications that are coming out right now is that we're not quite out of the woods yet. So negotiators at the nuclear talks in Switzerland, they did emerge from the marathon talks last week, right, with a pretty surprisingly detailed outline of this agreement. Of course, this agreement isn't going to be finalized until June, so we've got this whole 3-month buffer zone now to work through. But the problem really as it stands right now is that both sides kind of have different viewpoints on what this agreement was that they created last week. So we're not quite as out of the woods yet, apparently. So the only joint document issued publicly was actually a statement from Mohammad Zarif, who is Iran's foreign minister, and Federica Mogherini, who is the European Union foreign policy chief. And all of that whole joint document that was actually issued was only about seven paragraphs long. And the statement listed about a dozen parameters that are to guide the next 3 months of talks, including the commitment that Iran's Natanz installation will be the only location at which uranium is enriched during the life of the agreement. But the United States and Iran have also made public more detailed accounts of their agreements from Lausanne, and those accounts underscore their expectations for what the final accord should say. And a careful review shows now that there's still considerable overlap between the two accounts, which is good, but there's also some pretty noteworthy differences, which have raised the question of whether or not the two sides are really on the same page or not, especially on the question of how quickly the sanctions are going to be removed. The American and Iranian statements also do not clarify some other critical issues, such as precisely what sort of research Iran will be allowed to undertake on advanced centrifuges during the first 10 years of said accord. The Obama administration officials insist that there is no dispute on what was agreed upon behind closed doors, but to avoid time-consuming deliberations on what would be said publicly, the two sides decided during Wednesday's all-night discussions that they would each issue their own statements. So American officials acknowledged they did not inform the Iranians in advance of all of the parameters that the United States would like to make public in an effort to lock in progress made so far, as well as to strengthen the White House's case against any move by members of Congress to impose more sanctions against Iran. A senior administration official said that we talked to them and told them that we would have more things to say here in the future, and we didn't show them the paper, and we did not show them the whole list. Again, this official acknowledged that it was not that it was understood that we had two different narratives, but we would not contradict each other. So again, both sides are agreeing that they each kind of want different things and are kind of moving in different directions in terms of coming to an agreement on this accord, but both sides are acknowledging that that's okay right now. So no sooner were the negotiations over on Thursday, however, then Mr. Zarif posted a Twitter message that dismissed the five-page set of American parameters as spin. And in an appearance on Iranian television on Saturday, Mr. Zarif kept up that refrain, saying that Iran had formally complained to the Secretary of State John Kerry that the measures listed in the American statements were in contradiction to what had actually been accepted in Lausanne. So Mr. Zarif, however, did not challenge any nuclear provisions in the American document, but he did instead complain that the paper had been drawn up under Israeli and congressional pressure, and he restated Iran's insistence on fast sanction relief, including the need to terminate, not just suspend, European Union sanctions. So David Albrecht, who is the president of the Institute for Science and International Security, and also an expert who had closely monitored the nuclear talks, said that Mr. Zarif and President Hassan Rouhani of Iran may be engaged in their own spin to camouflage the significance of the concessions made. So again, the American side saying most likely that Iran itself is kind of doing a little bit of spin just so they can save a little face amongst their population, because they did obviously have to come to some sorts of concessions for this accord to go through. So both sides basically spinning a little bit. We're trying to spin it so that we can keep Congress, and we can probably try and keep Israel from attempting to create a bolder sanctioning program against Iran right now. But again, we're really in this three-month buffer zone right now. And so again, not really sure which way this is going to go. Lots of stuff up in the air right now, I guess, is long story short here right now. But a review of the dueling American and Iranian statements show that they differ in some important respects. The American statement says that Iran has agreed to shrink its stockpile of uranium to 300 kilograms, and that is a commitment that the Iranian statement does not mention. And the Iranian statement emphasizes that nuclear cooperation between Iran and the six powers that negotiated the agreement will grow, including in the construction of nuclear power plants, research reactors, and the use of isotopes for medical research. That potential cooperation is not mentioned on the American statement. So the American statement says that Iran will be barred from using its advanced centrifuges to produce uranium for at least 10 years. Before those 10 years are up, Iran will be able to conduct some limited research on the centrifuges. And the Iranian version obviously omits the word limited. So in other cases, the two sides agree on some measures but explain the implications very differently. In an important compromise, Iran will be allowed to convert its Fordo underground nuclear installation to a science and technology center. And in explaining this provision, the American statement notes that almost two-thirds of the centrifuges at Fordo will be removed and that none of those that will remain will be used to enrich uranium for at least 15 years. And this provision, Obama administration officials assert, carries no serious risk for the United States but will enable Iranians to save face. So again, you can see how both sides are kind of counterspinning it to their own populations here. Also, the Iranian statement stresses that the deal means more than only 1,000 of the centrifuges will be kept there, though it suggests that several hundred will be in operation to produce industrial or medical isotopes. And as reported by an Iranian journalist, Abbas Araki, the country's deputy foreign minister said that the modification at the Fordo installation could rapidly be reversed if the United States did not hold up its end of the deal. So again, you can see both sides here hedging their bets against the collapse of these accords. And Iran, really the most adamant thing that they are after here, and the thing that isn't necessarily outlined in the American side of the accord, is that Iran wants, as soon as this accord is implemented, they want the sanctions to be immediately canceled. And that's not just the American sanctions, but it's also the European Union sanctions. And it does seem like the Obama administration is going to concede to that, but I believe that that will be a major sticking point going forward. So anyway, that's what's going on with Iran right now. Obviously, Netanyahu, you can't mention Iran without mentioning Mr. Netanyahu coming out yesterday, basically saying that the U.S. and world powers need to increase sanctions on Iran to negotiate a better deal on Tehran's nuclear program. So Netanyahu used appearances on three U.S. Sunday network talk shows to drive home his opposition to what he called a bad deal with Iran that would leave the Persian nation unable or able to produce many nuclear bombs within years. So again, Netanyahu urging an overhaul to the framework of the deal, and the details must, of course, be hammered out by the 30th of June. So Netanyahu, all up in arms, still pretty upset about the deal going on with Iran. Wonder if that upsetness is going to result in some sort of attack against Iran. Just putting that out there because we are kind of, again, you know, if you listen to Friday's show with Rebecca Roth, we really outlined it on the Woo Crew, man. We are right in the midst of false flag territory right now. There's so many things going on in the Middle East. It's just absolutely out of control. And you just don't know. We just don't know what's going to happen next. But everybody's eyes are on the next 5 months. I can guarantee that. And especially the next 3 months in relation to Iran and Israel's anti-Iran policies now. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about this Kenya massacre. We covered this a little bit on Friday, but there's been a little bit more information has come out now. Now, this was Somalia's Islamic extremist group Al-Shabaab, and they warned over the weekend of more attacks in Kenya, like the assault on Gassara University that killed 150 people over the last week. Kenyan cities will run with blood, said Al-Shabaab, according to their site, intelligence monitoring group. And the Islamic militants said the attack on the Garissa College was in retaliation for killings carried out by Kenyan troops fighting rebels in Somalia. And they also go on to say no amount of protection or precaution or safety measures will be able to guarantee your safety, thwart another attack, or prevent another bloodbath. So following the extremist attacks, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta vowed to take harsh measures against the Islamic militants. In a nationally televised address, Kenyatta said his administration shall respond in the severest way possible to the Garissa attack, which occurred Thursday. And so again, Kenyatta said the country's security forces are pursuing the remaining accomplices. They will bring all of them to justice. We are also in active pursuit of the mastermind of the Garissa attack and have placed a reward for his capture. I mentioned that last week. I think it was $220,000 American right now. And they also declared 3 days of national mourning. They also arrested five people on suspicion of involvement in the attack. They arrested three people this weekend trying to cross into Somalia. And he said three of them are associates of Mohammed Mohammed, who was known also as Duliadin Gamadir, who is a former teacher at a Kenyan Madrasa Islamic school, who authorities coordinated the Garissa attack, who authorities say coordinated the Garissa attack. So that's the man that they put the $220,000 bounty on. Two other suspects were arrested at the college. So you may think, wait a minute, I thought they were all wearing explosive vest. Well, it turns out that was not the case at all. None of these people had explosive vests on. So that's basically how they were able to capture them. Again, capturing two at the day they killed them on the spot. They paraded their bodies in front of a whole bunch of people who had basically gathered in Garissa. And so that's what was going on in Kenya over the weekend. I want to talk a little, too, about the Houthi situation. Yeah, we still have time to do this. Okay. So, obviously, the Houthi situation. These are the people who are basically running amok in Yemen right now and are the target of the Saudi-led airstrikes going on in Yemen right now. And a lot of people will come out in the news, like Netanyahu and some of the idiots that run Congress, basically saying this is an Iranian proxy, this Houthi movement. But I did some research on this, and it's not true. It's not true in the least little bit. So, declaring this war against the Houthis of Yemen last week, Saudi Arabia has presented the conflict as sort of a noble intervention, right, aiming at displacing this Iranian proxy from power in favor of an internationally accepted, if not legitimately elected, President Hadi. But the story of the Houthis shows that far from an invention of Iran, their origins were actually entirely domestic in nature and also a backlash against political corruption that has defined the nation for decades. WikiLeaks documents from the U.S. State Department underscore this history. The Houthi movement had its origins in 1993 parliamentary elections, and longtime dictator Ali Abdullah Saleh, his GPC party, won a plurality. But in trying to ensure a weakened opposition, Saleh negotiated a deal with Hussein al-Houthi, who is a powerful member of the opposition al-Haq party. Houthi was to distance himself from Haq and back the GPC in return for his support from the ruling party. Houthi did as he was asked, and he was stabbed in the back in 1997 election when Saleh's office heavily campaigned against him, costing him his seat in parliament. Out of office, Hussein decided to travel abroad to complete his doctorate. He returned in 2001 and quickly became an influential religious leader aimed at uniting the various independent clerics of Zaidi Shiism under a single banner. And successful in this, he began publicly condemning Saleh as a U.S. puppet while harshly condemning the U.S. invasion of Iraq. By 2004, the Yemeni military was moving against Houthi and his followers, and Hussein was killed on September 10th, 2004, putting a temporary end to hostilities. Now, Hussein's father, Badr al-Din Houthi, started an uprising in 2005, and his brother, Abdul Malik Houthi, started an even bigger one in 2007. Their demands centered around equal treatment for their homeland around Sadaa, which always got the short end of the infrastructure investment. So by 2009, the region was in full-scale war, with Saleh vowing to defend public schools and all other basic social spending to pay for weapons to wipe the Houthis out. So, Saleh vowed to defund public schools and all other basic social spending to pay for weapons to wipe out the Houthis. Saleh often accused the Houthis of being an Iran proxy, though the U.S. State Department confirmed that this was not the case, and indeed that the Houthis were arming themselves most entirely from the black market and the purchase of arms from the Yemeni military itself. So with interests largely domestic and not even nationwide, and religion never more than tangentially related to their ideology, the Houthis never seem to make sense as allies to Iran. The Zaidi brand of Shia Islam isn't even particularly close to Iran's version, and the Hussein's Houthis opposition to the Iraq war, which greatly benefited Iran, reflects pretty clearly how different the two sides actually are. So the Houthis were largely defeated in 2009 when they began to reassert themselves in 2011 during the Arab Spring, and this was temporarily calmed down by 2012, when the ouster of Saleh and his replacement of a single candidate vote by General Hadi. Hadi followed through on attempts to weaken the Houthis by implementing Sunni Islamist factions in the Sadaa area, which led to another war in 2014. And this time the Houthis won outright and marched on the capital of Sanaa. And here too, they were also victorious. The takeover of the capital has set the stage for an on-again, off-again battles with Hadi, and the Houthis were pushing heavily for constitutional reforms and for free elections, a point on which Hadi resigned in 2015. His resignation lasted only a few weeks, and then Hadi declared himself unresigned, moved to Aden, and is now vowing to take back the country. And when the Houthis routed him yet again, Hadi fled to Saudi Arabia and courted their military intervention to ensure his role. So again, this is the United States using, I mean, we are absolutely providing them drone coverage of the area. We're providing intel to Saudi Arabia. If you don't think the United States is part of this program, you're crazy. And really what it is about trying to support the puppet government that we had put in there in the first place. But to say that they are an Iranian proxy is just clearly, clearly not true. That's just what's going on there right now. What else is going on? Oh, and then just to follow up on that, and a move that the Pentagon officials are describing as just a deepening of their military involvement in Saudi Arabia's attack on Yemen, they've announced military aircraft from CENTCOM will begin aerial refueling operations for Saudi planes currently bombing the nation of Yemen right now. So this announcement obviously could not be worse timed, coming after a three-day span when the Saudi planes killed scores of civilians in a pair of attacks on a dairy and a refugee camp in northern Yemen. And though the U.S. has tried to downplay its involvement in the war, officials did confirm that U.S. surveillance planes have been flying over Yemen and providing the Saudis with intelligence for their airstrikes, which isn't an appealing role considering how bloody and unpopular these strikes have now apparently become. So the U.S. had previously been so loath to admit their military involvement in the Saudi war that some outlets had assumed the U.S. would be opposed to the conflict and that the Saudi invasion is being done over the objections of the United States. But that, unfortunately, could not be further from the truth. Saudi Arabia, like other U.S. allies in the region, has more or less carte blanche to do whatever it likes. And the indications are that the U.S. has not only backed the war but helped to orchestrate it. And no clearer indication could really be put out there that the announcement from the Obama administration earlier last week that they were ending curbs on military aid to Egypt, another nation involved in this war, with an eye towards providing more warplanes to attack Yemen with. So again, anybody out there who believes that we're not part of this mission in Yemen is just deluding themselves right now. So I don't know how much more clear we need to be today. Oh man, pardon me, I gotta wet my whistle here. Hang on a second here, guys. Coffee is good. Do you guys know that the Chinese Navy is preparing to commission three new nuclear-powered submarines with a vertical launching system able to fire supersonic anti-ship missiles? This is a report that came out of China Daily just yesterday. The China Central Television showed satellite pictures earlier this week of three submarines anchored at an unidentified port, claiming that the new submarines are China's most advanced Type 93G attack submarines. Why am I bringing this up? Well, just because I feel like most people out there don't understand exactly how bolstered China is at this point. China now operates the largest number of attack submarines in the world, ladies and gentlemen, and they are still rapidly expanding. They actually had one of their nuclear submarines out on a 95-day sea trial the other day, and as somebody who works for the DOD working on submarines, I can tell you 95 days is a really long sea trial. That's a long time to be out there in a tube with 45 of your closest friends. So anyway, China moving ahead. Wonder why they need weapons of war if the world's all going to start getting along soon. Just kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? Okay, let's move on to some national news here, getting into the United States. Second aircraft. Kev's pointing out they're putting out a second aircraft carrier, too. I'll tell you, man, the Shanghai Corporation Organization, if you guys are not familiar with that, that is something that nobody ever seems to talk about. They are just as big as NATO, and they speak predominantly Russian and China. Do we need to go further than that? Do I need to explain more about why the Shanghai Corporation Organization is a scary deal? Because you got to start figuring out, too, that the BRICS Bank and also the Asian Investment Infrastructure Bank is all going to play into all that. It's going to all play right into this stuff. So, oh man, getting some good stuff in the chat room right now. Hang on here. I can't read all this at once, guys. Can't read. Who was told to speed up? What's going on? Oh, they were told to speed up the Chinese for their aircraft carrier. Wow. Scary stuff. I imagine they do want to project a lot of power. I'm sorry, I'm having a private conversation with Kev Baker in the chat room right now. Appreciate you guys hanging out for this, but we're talking about the bolstering of China's military right now. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me as unusual when I was working for the DOD, and I worked on submarines, I was a hydraulic and lubrication specialist. I'll tell you, walk around with a hat on that says lubrication specialist, you're going to get some looks, ladies and gentlemen, like I did. But one of the things that struck me as very, very unusual when I was on a very, very modern submarine, I'm talking about a modern, you know, Ohio class sub, I was in the bathroom, and on the bathroom wall, there was a placard on the wall, you know, and, submarines have this time that they run. It's called quiet time. You gotta be quiet during quiet time. You can't talk. Everything is a whisper. You gotta, because, you know, acoustics underwater carry forever, and that's basically for the longest time how submarines were found and captured, right? So quiet time, that's a big deal on a sub. When they're running quiet, you guys are quiet. So I'm reading this plaque in the bathroom, and it says, quiet time means you do not talk unless you want to end up in a Chinese slave labor camp. And I thought, man, it's like 2012. Are we still really concerned? I thought they were our biggest ally and our biggest trade partner. We were all hunky dory with them. Why are we giving the Navy indications that there are still a major, major threat to us? And why aren't we expressing that threat to the American people who are buying all their products and have no idea what they're putting on themselves or around themselves or in themselves? I mean, it's just crazy to me that we would have this trade ally like that, but then in our military, we have this whole, we have this completely different culture. You know what I mean? Oh man, that's funny stuff. You guys liked my, that was really my title. I really had to wear a hat that said hydraulic and lubrication specialist, and it didn't get me nearly as much, you know. Anyway, moving back into the news. Okay, California. Obviously, this big, huge cut in California is raising a lot of questions about California. We had the story last week. Obviously, Governor Jerry Brown, proposing this big 25% cut in water consumption. That's going to be a huge, huge deal. And, I'm starting to wonder now what the ultimate reaction in California is going to be. You know, there's almost 40 million people that live in California, and that was really not the way that state was set up. I mean, obviously it's a beautiful place. I lived there for a little while. It's a nice place to be. It'll mess with your time frame a little bit. When every day is 71, it makes it tough to figure out when Christmas was or what was happening at the time of the year. Anyway, coming back to this whole water thing, you know, we had this story last week that the oil and frack producers, right, they're not going to get subjected to this. That's a $2 million away bill, 2 million gallon a day bill for them. But you just have to start wondering if people are going to start moving out of California. They're going to, I mean, most of the almonds, there's another huge, huge, huge crop that comes out of California, and it actually soaks up quite a bit of water as well. But they're just, I just don't know, man. You go out in places like Palm Springs, where it's, I mean, essentially it's a desert. You guys are trying to grow food and live in a desert with this super high class of life. Where's the water going to come from? Where's the water going to come from? Why are we not talking about desalination plants and things like that? You know, has this been the orchestrated demise of California? California has had to deal with a lot of stuff, and they've run out of money before. What else have they run out of? Let's see. They've run out of money. They've run out of, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. They've been through the gauntlet before, I guess is my point that I'm trying to make here. And so I just kind of wonder, you know, are they going to react? Are they going to be able to adapt to this? How are these ginormous bills? You know, one of the big things that's come out now is that that if you're taking too long of showers, they're going to start billing you. We talked about that last week. Part of this was changing the billing structure for water. How are they going to know if you're taking a long shower? You know, are we getting into smart meter land here now? I don't understand how the control mechanism here is going to work. But my heart really goes out to people in California right now, because I just don't think it's going to get better out there. I really think it's going to be a bad deal, guys. Anyway, we got to go to a 3-minute break. Wow, I can't believe that half hour went that quickly. We got a lot more news to cover, guys. We'll be right back. Appreciate you guys hanging with me here. I'll get my stuff together here in a minute. Get this all straightened out. Keep it right here, guys. Back in 3 minutes.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday through Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try iodine now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow. Why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine now. Only at MUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Your TFR Roundtable, Saturdays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I realize that I haven't even talked about the guests for the week or anything like that. This dude in the backwards show thing is kind of throwing me off. And before I do that, I gotta say, I am absolutely thrilled about what I just learned from Mr. Kevin Baker about his show this evening. Oh my gosh. I know where I'm going to be for this show. Holy cow. Guys, he's going to be talking to Anthony Patch today, and they are going to be talking all about CERN, the Higgs field, the search for dark matter, and the occult side of CERN. And I would be willing to bet that Kevin and Marty are going to go way deeper down the rabbit hole than we could even possibly imagine. So if you guys have you guys need to clear your schedule. Make sure you're here at Truth Frequency for Kev Baker's show this afternoon, because hopefully I'm going to get to the science stuff. But CERN did in fact fire up again yesterday on Easter. Just throwing that out there, kind of unusual. They did fire back up, and I, like Kev and Marty and a lot of the other hosts around here, are very, very concerned about who the people are that are running CERN and what they're actually trying to do and what they actually might be able to make happen with that thing. So I am going to be, I'll be here all day anyway, because I like listening to Roger Sales' show after mine. I'm pretty much in the chat room all day at this point. But I got to tell you how excited I am about Kev's show this afternoon. That is just going to be awesome. So definitely everybody check that out for sure. Man, that's going to be good stuff. Way to go, Kev. Nice job, buddy. Love being part of this team on this whole TFR thing. Okay, just talking about California for a little bit, I just want to throw it out there, too, that a lot of people in California are probably going to be moving soon. So if you live someplace where you're looking at trying to buy land with water, the property values of those places is going to go up significantly. If you got to think, if the farmers in California are going to have to go find another place to farm, which is pretty likely at this point, I mean, thinking about almonds and stuff like that, all the things that are produced in California, they're going to have to go someplace where there's farmland. All of those places here in the Midwest, the Missouri, we've got plenty of water. There's springs all over here, Arkansas, Carolinas, all of that area, man, those values are going to go up. Those values are going to go way up. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to go on with California here coming up in the future. But that's what I know right now. Speaking of what I know right now, there's going to be a drill, and you guys know how much we love drills around here, because you never know when they just might accidentally go live, but a dirty bomb drill. Yep, I'm going to say that again. A dirty bomb drill will be located in Richmond, Virginia on Saturday, April 11th. So again, in Richmond on Saturday, April 11th. They are going to be holding a dirty bomb drill with more than 200 soldiers, airmen, local law enforcement, and firefighting personnel will be descending on the city in order to defuse the situation as part of an emergency response exercise. Hopefully, we're just going to put that out there. Hopefully, it will still be an exercise. This is going to be a day-long exercise. It is hosted by the El Cerrito Police Department. It will take place at a facility which is shared by the Richmond and El Cerrito Fire Departments. And this is according to the National Guard of California announcement on Friday. So more than 100 soldiers and airmen belonging to the National Guard's 49th Military Police Brigade based in Fairfield will conduct decontamination, medical, explosive ordnance disposal, and security training. And the El Cerrito and Richmond Police and Fire Departments and the Contra Costa County Office of Emergency Services will all be taking part. And again, the 49th Military Police Brigade is home to FEMA's Region 9 Homeland Response Force, which is comprised of military police, engineers, medical and chemical corps soldiers, and armsmen. It is also responds to both man-made and natural emergencies in the territory of more than 400,000 acres encompassing California, Arizona, Nevada, Hawaii, and the U.S. islands and territories across the Pacific Ocean. Now, I said that that was in Richmond, but I'm wondering now if Richmond is in California. You would think I would have had that little detail squared away before we did this article, but I didn't. So I guess you're going to have to go figure it out for yourselves, guys. But someplace in Richmond over the weekend, there's going to be a dirty bomb drill. And I hope that all of you people are very far away from all of that. Okay. What else is going on right now? Oh, yeah. Also, Homeland Security decided this week they were going to start stockpiling on less lethal specialty munitions. This is obviously kind of comes behind the 1.6 billion rounds of lethal ammunition that they reportedly purchased last year. But now there's a new Homeland Security purchase order listed on the FedBizOps, and it's also raising a couple of eyebrows here given the heated and divided political and social climate at hand, obviously looking over at what happened in Ferguson. But this is a 9-page PDF request for arsenal specialized weaponry for training and deployment against crowds. So right now you got to wonder why Homeland Security is beefing up their crowd control mechanisms and why they're asking for all of these things. And this is a pretty impressive list. One of the ones that really freaks me out on it are these things called ferret rounds, which I had never heard of before, but a ferret round designed to penetrate barriers and then deliver debilitating or disruptive chemicals. So these projectiles shall be designed to penetrate barriers of glass, particle board, and interior walls, and then upon impact of the barrier, a nose cone will rupture and instantaneously deliver the OC liquid on the other side of the barrier. Does this really seem like something that we need Homeland Security to be buying right now? I mean, what in the hell is going on here, ladies and gentlemen? Why are they building up all of this material? I mean, do they expect martial law? Do they expect something to be going down in the streets here pretty soon? I don't know. I do not know, but I don't like it. You got to remember also all the banking people that were issued their get home safe packs, you know, the minuscule little survival kits that they dished out to all the banks last year. Yeah, all that stuff's still happening. It's just, you know, history doesn't exist in a vacuum here, guys. Let's see. Do we want to talk about this? Well, Rand Paul throwing his hat in the ring. It's expected to happen tomorrow. I don't know how you guys feel about Rand Paul. I'll tell you this. He ain't no Ron Paul. You know what I mean? The fact that he went to the Wailing Wall and kissed it, I'm pretty much not going to vote for him. Probably you guys know by this, by now, I don't vote for anybody because I'm just not going to go do that. So, no, wait a minute. I'm getting a news update here now. Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me right now? Okay, hang on. I got to clarify. I'm getting some word from Kevin, and this could be really big news. So, Kevin, I'm just going to ask you, are you telling me right now that you have made the switch and that the teeming masses of people that mob you in the chat room and are literally foaming at the mouth demanding a second hour, we're all going to be satisfied? Is that what I'm hearing right now, Kevin? Because that would be pretty much the best news of the weekend right now. So that's what I'm hearing right now. Kev Baker Show moving to 2 hours, ladies and gentlemen. Oh my gosh. Oh my, I don't even know how to say it. I don't even know what to do. And 2 hours tonight about CERN. Holy cow. My whole evening just got totally goofed up because there's no place I would rather be than listening to Kev and Marty for 2 hours. Just absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome. Yeah. See, people in the chat room are going to freak out about that, Kev. That is so cool. Yeah. We all wonder when you sleep now, buddy. I don't know what you're going to do at this point. No sleep for Kev, but hey, you know what? The truth is more important. We can all sleep after we win, right? That's the name of the game here. Okay. Non-citizens in New York could soon be given the right to vote. Which way do you guys feel about this? Because this is kind of an interesting topic to me, and there's both, yeah, really, what is sleep? There's two ways that this whole situation in New York could be taken right now. So the routinely described New York is as a global hub, right? It's a place so thoroughly penetrated by the international capital and migration that it seems both at once within and also outside of the United States. It's the center of American commerce and media, and it's also the center of its politics, demographics, and worldly outlook. Obviously make Big Apple kind of an outlier here, but pardon me. Okay. But New York may be about to become even more distinct. The left-leaning New York City Council is currently drafting legislation that would allow all legal residents, regardless of citizenship, the right to vote in city elections. If this measure passes into law, it would mark a victory for a voting rights campaign that seeks to enfranchise non-citizen voters in local elections across the country. A few towns have already permitted non-citizen residents to vote locally, but New York would be obviously by far the largest jurisdiction to do so. Under the likely terms of the legislation, legally documented residents who have lived in New York City for at least 6 months will have the ability to vote in municipal elections. And the reports suggest that the city council is discussing this legislation with Mayor Bill de Blasio's office and that the bill might be introduced as soon as just a few weeks from now. So while the legislation stands a pretty good chance of sailing through the council and even winning the approval of the mayor, the prospect of New York City enfranchising its residents has obviously stoked a little bit of controversy. Many Americans find the idea of non-citizen voting entirely unpalatable and fear that it undermines the sanctity and privilege of citizenship. And advocates for non-voting or for non-citizen voting in New York argue that it would right a glaring wrong, invoking the ancient American battle cry of no taxation without representation. So that is actually a fairly good point, right? This is a point to the enormous numbers of non-citizen residents who do pay taxes, send their children to public schools, and are active members of their communities but have no say in local elections. The immigrant-heavy borough of Queens, non-citizens make up as much as half of the population, especially in areas like Jackson Heights or Elmhurst or Corona. And in parts of Brooklyn and the Bronx, they make up well over a third in certain districts. So it's a very different in Manhattan than it is in Middle America. And this is a staff attorney from the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund speaking here. But it does make a fairly large point that it is a lot different than the rest of Middle America. So what do you guys feel about that? Do you guys feel like perhaps these people are being taxed without representation and maybe they need to get an opportunity to vote on things like their school districts and stuff like that? Or are they in fact illegal immigrants and they shouldn't be in our country in the first place? And why would we give them voting? Because obviously that's going to go major to Democrats and handouts and things like that. All the other typical right wing type arguments, but just very interesting stuff that that's what's going on in New York right now. And it could be a pretty big change for the nation there. The IRS deadline has been extended. Yes, for the Obamacare customers that were sent the wrong tax forms, we had this story a couple of days ago, maybe a week or two ago, where a bunch of Obamacare customers essentially received the wrong tax form from the federal government this spring. And apparently now Obama came out this weekend, said that they are totally fine if they're not going to have any penalties if they miss the April 15th deadline. Now, you will have to file for an extension. But the issue here is that, this stuff was caught back in January. They knew all of this happened in February. I think that's probably when we had this story, actually, and again, just under a million people had been sent the wrong forms, and about 80,000 of those people are still waiting for the correct form. So again, now I can't even imagine trying to deal with the Obamacare paperwork involved with the IRS right now. Like that pretty much made it apparent for me that I wasn't going to be involved with this whole project anymore, because I've tried to look through the forms, the 1095s and all this stuff to try and get everything sorted out. It's ridiculous. And it's not going to last long enough that I think it's really going to affect anybody. I'm pretty sure that this whole thing is going to go away soon. And by whole thing, I mean the IRS, I mean Obamacare, I mean all of it. It's just going to go away because it's not something that I'm going to deal with. So I would imagine there are a lot of people out there like me who are just saying, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. You can keep all your stupid country and I'll be fine over here. Okay, federal agents also in the United States have nurtured into being, I'm sorry, that's not what I wanted to say. They've arrested two women who apparently allegedly planned to detonate a bomb in New York City after becoming radicalized by the self-styled Islamic State. I'll tell you what, I've been around for a long time and I'm pretty radical, just saying, you know, I'm used to skateboard and stuff, but how do you become radicalized by self-styled Islamic States if you live in New York City and you're not, you know, around those types of people? Anyway, these U.S. citizens, one was Noelle, one was Asia, and they were arrested Thursday in New York and each charged with conspiracy to use weapons of mass destruction resulting from a multi-year undercover operation waged by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. According to the FBI, the two ladies had been researching instructions on how to make homemade bombs and were considering detonating one inside of the U.S. as part of a domestic terrorist attack. But good enough here. Good looking out by the FBI. They've been investigating the pair since May of 2013, according to a sworn affidavit used to justify the arrests of the women this week, and began collecting intelligence on the two beginning in August of 2014 when the two started conversing with an undercover agent. Together, the three started trading recipes for explosives taken from online articles, studied chemistry textbooks, and discussed past acts of terror, according to the FBI, and were weighing an attack of their own. Again, the agency claims the public was never in danger. Why wasn't the public ever in danger, ladies and gentlemen? It's because it's crap. It's because it's total crap. It's a nurtured event. We've had these people under our thumbs for 2 years now, and when you employ a federal Bureau of Investigation private agent to go and freaking make cahoots with these people and start passing around Pinterest, you know, posts about bombs and chemistry stuff, that's called nurtured event. That's called nurturing an event. They are trying to nurture people into committing acts of terror, and then so that they can then, you know, bust them and say, oh, we saved the world again. Nobody was ever in danger. Yeah, it's because you guys were in charge the whole freaking time. Has the FBI ever actually stopped a terrorist campaign to date? Have they actually ever stopped anybody from doing anything that they didn't already nurture into being? And I think these two girls probably in that same boat. Every time you read these articles, you get into that part where it says, oh, we had an undercover officer dealing with them for 2 years now. Well, that's pretty glaring, ladies and gentlemen, pretty glaring. Did I mention earlier that we're going to have more guests on this week? I think I did, but I think I forgot to say who they were going to be. I'll just give you a quick heads up. Tomorrow, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny will be on the show, and we'll be talking about natural health with one of my very favorite people on the planet in terms of natural health. And then on Wednesday, L.A. Marzulli will be here, so we'll be talking about all kinds of crazy stuff, I am sure. I love talking to L.A. It's just about as fascinating as it can possibly get. And then Ken Shortkin Jr. will be here on Thursday. I'm going to keep my Friday guest to myself because it's still a little up in the air at present. Okay, hopping over to the markets right now. Let's find out. Oh, happy days are here again, ladies and gentlemen. We are up on the Dow right now, 148 points. My goodness, I got to get my broker on the phone, start selling some stuff here. U.S. dollar index is going down a little bit this morning, not very much, but we're at 96 and 84. The euro has risen, just like we would expect it to do, because it's falling against the dollar, or rising against the dollar, as it were. We're at 109 and 93. I don't know if Truth is still hanging out in the chat room, but if he can grab me the BDI, that would be super awesome. Let's check out what gold is doing. We are up quite a bit today. $20 up on gold today at 12 and 19. So $1,219 will get you an ounce of gold, and $17, 10 big pennies, will get you an ounce of silver. Let's go check out and see what oil is doing. Oil is actually up almost 5.5% today, but we're still right at $51.78. And let's see. So that was oil. Let's check on our Bitcoin. 255 and 45 on the Bitcoin right now. So there we go. No BDI since April 2nd. Last was 588. All of Truth's sources, like mine, have no new numbers. I wonder if it has to do with the holiday season or something like that, Truth. I don't know where the BDI numbers actually come from. I know some people are off for today. Obviously, American markets are not part of those. U.S. labor market, we probably ought to talk about this, cooled significantly last month as the U.S. Labor Department released a weaker-than-expected non-farm payrolls report, dropping below 200,000. So Friday, awesome! Kevin, stop teasing us. I'm sorry, guys. I hate to keep going back and forth to the chat room. But there's now potential that Kev's show might be 3 hours tonight, which means there goes my evening. Thanks a lot, Kev. Anyway, Friday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said there were 126,000 jobs created in March, which was down from February's revised number of 264,000. I'm sorry. So February's initial report pegged the growth at 300,000 jobs, and January's employment data was also downwardly revised to 200,000, all the way down from 240,000. So again, dismal, dismal, dismal job numbers in the last 3 months, and they do continue to be dropping. So here's kind of a rare story, and I love this. I love this story. And a very rare, rare, rare break. The federal government right now here in the United States is shutting down a bogus for-profit school called Corinthian, and all of the fake schools that are surreptitiously operated by Corinthian but by a different name, or any legitimate business feel the need to advertise and operate under multiple names while selling the same product. But again, Corinthian and all of their subsidiary schools all being now closed by the federal government. So the scam has now been interrupted, and the students are finding out that they're getting indebted for bogus education sooner than usual, as opposed to me, who went to school and had to graduate and try and find a job first before I realized that the education I got was bogus. But anyway, the students there at Corinthian and all of the subsidiary establishments there are essentially not going to pay. They're taking on they're not going to pay. They're saying, we're not going to do this. We're not paying. This debt isn't real. This is a for-profit college, and the education that we got is useless, so we're not going to pay, which is exactly what every single one of you people out there needs to do if you're absolutely surrounded by student loan debt and you can't find a job. That's just a proper business decision. It has nothing to do with anything other than that. And the bottom line, too, is that most of the loans that you got were invalid anyway. So there's about six ways to beat this monster as far as I'm concerned. But this is a long time coming here, guys. Someday, the immense frauds going on at state schools, especially community colleges, will also become common knowledge, and we will see revolts there as well. But I suspect that the government won't be quite so forthcoming when it comes time to shutting down the government schools. But anyway, the Corinthian is being dismantled, and its students given debt relief on their private loans. The institution is under federal and state investigations and is the target of multiple lawsuits alleging predatory lending practices. But Hornus and the Corinthian 15, who are the group of 15 students who are basically fighting back against the school right now, are demanding relief for their federal student payments or their federal student loans as well. So the private loans are voided, and that's great. That's a start. But why not the federal loans? The reason those federal loans were approved was because the bogus school was granted bogus accreditation by the government in the first place. This isn't the student's fault. The government should take responsibility for letting a completely bogus and ineffectual regulatory system like accreditation be the gatekeeper for the student loan scam. The students feel, and I 1,000% agree with them, that if the bogus education means that the private loans should be resolved, then the federal loans also need to be dissolved. So, right, I feel bad for any kids who are cheated like this in a for-profit school, and also realize that many community colleges work in the same way, with empirical evidence that at least one-third of the community college coursework is stuff that you do not even have to show up for to get an A. So is the federal government paying attention to any of this? Take case in point, my friend Natasha. She finished her two-year paralegal degree in 2012 and had no luck finding a job in Southern California, so she moved back to Missouri, where she now works at a grocery store, and she's in debt to the tune of about $50,000. Nathan completed his associate's degree in 2012, got his bachelor's degree from Everest College in 2014, and he is still now working at Smashburger with $68,000 in student loans to pay off. It's pretty hard to push forward with a music career when you're pulling double shifts, right? I didn't get any education that I was promised. I did not receive any knowledge that I could use in my day-to-day life, and I cannot get a career, he says. And I agree with this. Now, I'm not trying to take all the, you know, burden off of kids out there. If you're going to go to a freaking trade school, learn a trade, learn to do something with your mind that you can actually use out in the real world, you know. And I'm probably the worst person to give you advice on this, because obviously music major, right? I sang opera for 5 years. So what in the world could I possibly do with my degree? I chose to get a degree that I wanted to learn because it interested me, not because I knew that I could go out and get a job afterwards, you know. So again, but this coursework at these bogus schools is almost always worthless. Mostly, legitimate schools don't accept it, which means your students can't transfer out. So they get trapped in this for-profit, and then you end up with a degree that isn't worth anything to the tune of $50,000 or $68,000 or whatever. it's impossible to get out from under. So I agree. A lot of these degrees out there, ladies and gentlemen, are absolute jokes. And I like the fact that the federal government has at least taken some steps against Corinthian, because I just feel so bad for these people who, you know, we all grew up with the parents saying you got to go to school, you have to go to college, you have to get a good job. But that's not the way the world works anymore. That's not anywhere near the way the world works anymore. You don't go to college to get a job. You go to college to get into debt, and that makes you a debt slave forever. It's essentially what they have figured out how to do is to sell you a mortgage without giving you a house, ladies and gentlemen. That is what they've done. And I'll tell you, the interest rates on these things, if you miss a payment, is astronomical. I remember when I first came out of school, they wanted something like $1,800 a month. $1,800 a month. Absolutely unbelievable. There's no way. When I'm smart enough to realize that the entire contract that I signed was invalid anyway, and I've obviously dealt with that the way I would suggest all of you deal with that out there. But until you do that, it can be a very scary world. Okay. Oh, let's see. What else do we want to talk about in the economy right now? Ecuador getting ready to implement their own digital currency. It is not Bitcoin, but it is going to be one like Bitcoin. Ecuador is probably the first large country to come out and say we're going to allow a digital currency to operate alongside with our currency for a little while, and it'll probably be a couple of years until it's completely implemented. But just interesting stuff. We had that story about Greece the other day potentially thinking about moving to Bitcoin should everything fall to heck there. So I still want to believe in these cryptocurrencies. And again, Bitcoin today trading at about 255. Lots of good stuff still happening behind the scenes with Bitcoin. Let's talk about this really quick too. Kraft Foods. We'll end on this one for the day. Well, you know what? Hang on a second. Let me see if there was something else. We're going to have a big CERN show tonight on Kev's show, so I will skip over the fact that CERN just fired back up over the weekend. God, I can't wait to hear the show tonight, Kev. This is going to be awesome. We had that little story about the cybersecurity executive order that Barack Obama passed last week, and had to do a little digging on it to figure out exactly what it entailed and what it meant. But the long story short, it did mean, in fact, that it is now illegal and that you could have your bank account sanctioned by the government if you were to support somebody out there like Edward Snowden. So an Oregon software programmer has called on Barack Obama to arrest him for possibly violating this executive order, in which the 27-year-old believes prohibits citizens from providing cybersecurity or cybercurrency to intelligence leaker Edward Snowden. This guy's name is Christopher Ives. He is in Lafayette, Oregon. He sent Snowden, who fled to Moscow after being charged with espionage, 33 big cents via the cybercurrency Bitcoin. He says it's not really about the amount that I'm sending. It's the principle of the matter. But he also put on the social networking site Reddit, please come arrest me. I live in Oregon. My name is Christopher Ives, and you can reach me at blah, 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 blah. I list his phone number there right in the world for everyone to see. So we'll have to wait and see if the Homeland Security comes and arrests him for providing material support to terrorists of the state, which is exactly what, you know, the government thinks that Edward Snowden is now. So I fully support this guy, this Christopher Ives in Lafayette, Oregon. And when I get off of the show today, I will myself, in fact, be sending some Bitcoin to Mr. Edward Snowden just for the principle of doing it, because I think principles is pretty much all we have left at this point. Anyway, that does it for the show today, guys. Lots more news I couldn't cover. It's all over at redpillreports.com under the show section. You can also find more about Gary Milievsky and more about Snoop Wall as well. I hope you guys enjoyed that. This is a good way to start a Monday, I think. Cannot tell you how much I'm looking forward to Kev and Marty tonight on the Kev Baker Show. So, man, I will see you guys in the chat room then. We will be back tomorrow with Dr. Terry Tenpenny. That's not it. Dr. Tenpenny will be joining us tomorrow. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care. Have a great day, guys.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308. Or call in to your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH. Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media. 24 hours a day. Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.